Hey there, welcome to Motorcycles and Misfits, coming to you from the Recycle Garage in sunny Santa Cruz, California, USA. Wow, what a day. Hey, listen, let's get to who's in the room. Who is in the room? Well, I shall tell you. Running the board like a professional.
Well, let's not get carried away.
No, he's doing very nicely. No. It's Stumpy John.
My whole purpose in life is to have Liza not mad at me or keep that'll, tapping me throughout this whole thing.
That'll never happen.
I know. It never will.
I just got a text.
Yeah, I'm sure you did. Love you, Liza.
Bypassing the classy girl couch for now and sitting to my immediate left is Empire State Craig.
Say it ain't so.
It is so. It's the so-ist. What are you going to say to yourself, Craig?
Well, it's been real.
Craig's been gone. You've been a ghost.
Well, you're back now, which is the important thing. We're going to have a chat in a bit. Sitting immediately to Craig's left, next to his favorite window. Snaggy Jim.
Yeah, it's the COVID window. Some things linger, yeah. Ride dirt bikes, be kind. That's what I got for you tonight.
Wise words all.
And bring firewood.
We are being joined by a latecomer. Are you joining us or are you going to just be in the peanut gallery?
Oh, Jake 2.0 is in the house.
I got to get him in the right seat. Hold on.
I think he might be mobbing like a motherfucker.
In the meantime.
But I don't think he's lynching.
No, he's pounding Pabst Blue Ribbons, which is
Heineken. Heineken, fuck that shit.
Meanwhile,
Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Yes, ain't that the truth? And coming to us from his beautiful workshop in Velveeta, Oregon.
Is that where the cheese is from?
Yes, a lot of cheese in Oregon. It's Bagel.
Yes, with all the rain we've been having, the ground is the consistency of Velveeta right now.
Is it really? Oh, it's a bit rainy. Yes. Surprisingly enough, although it is sunny now, it has been quite rainy in Santa Cruz today and yesterday.
Yeah, but I think we all got rides in.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think
despite the weather, because that's how we roll.
Everyone got a ride in. Are you ready, Farmer Jake?
Bonjour.
Bonjour, ça va?
Jacques Pondu.
Fuck. Parlez-vous a hummer hummer?
Dabernacle.
Hummer hummer. Nobody accuses this show of not being an international flavor. Let's have a little talk about what we did today. And we can't do that, really, without talking to Jake. You arrived early. Three specimens.
It was Exhibit actually, A. Exhibit B.
What was awesome is
and
yes.
Exhibit C.
Yeah, so it was actually well done opening early. I saw Kong parked on the street before 11 a.m.
Yes.
Doug was down here with his DRZ at opening time. So.
Well, no, I take things seriously. Oh, you know what? We always do this. We get ahead of ourselves.
Yes.
Where is our fearless leader? Well, I shall tell you.
Who?
Our fearless leader, Liza.
She's eating groundhogs.
Yeah, she's eating something, which ain't good. She's in Peru riding Royal Enfield motorbikes. Did I ever tell you that I have a little niece who lives in Peru?
No.
She actually lives in Cusco. And that ride that Liza is on will be going through Cusco. And she's not from Peru. She's just, you know, very normal Oregon gal. She fell in love. Very much the adventurer, you know, running, jumping, that kind of thing. And she fell in love with a lovely young man who is from that neck of the woods. And they got married and they live a very, very simple life. A long way from America, but a very, very simple life in rural Peru, and she is having a wonderful time.
I did speak to Liza not long ago, actually like 15 minutes ago, oddly enough. I was enjoying a homemade limoncello on my front porch with my girl.
Is she suffering from food poisoning yet?
Oh, no, but I did ask her about the llamas. Are they better on a stick or in a bowl? And she seemed to favor the llamas on a stick more than the bowl. Right? Obviously, the younger the better. I did see a lovely picture of her holding the llamas she was about to have on a stick, which was kind of cute.
Do you eat them like whole on a stick? Because that'd be quite a big stick.
Yeah, it depends on the altitude you're at the time. But I'll talk about me. I'll give Liza's ride report a little later.
Yeah, because we would like ourselves. To do. We are getting ahead of ourselves. I'm very interested in what we did today. So let's get back to Farmer Jake and Exhibit A, B, and C. And it was successful on some counts. So shall we start with Exhibit A?
Indeed, yeah.
Which was a?
02 or 03 TTR 90.
Farmer Jake is king of the barn find, by the way.
King I've been lucky lately. I've been lucky find. Lately.
Well, you got to talk about where these bikes came from, too.
So, shit. The TTR, I think.
TTR 90. I didn't know they made one.
Yeah.
I didn't either.
You want to know what's fucked about the TTR 90. If you want a gas tank for it, and I might, because it looks like there's a fiberglass repair on this one.
Somebody did some like surfboard repair on it. Totally.
Which I could probably fix up because I'm skilled in that department, but the TTR 90 gas tank, there's three of them I think in the whole world, and they're all on eBay, and they're like between $250 and $500 fucking dollars, and if you go on Revzilla they're almost $500,
hence the fiberglass work.
What the fuck,
crazy.
So it's stuck, it's been sitting out. I don't know, I gave them $200. I figure the kids will be into it, and if they're not, some other people's kids will be into it. So it seems like a good it seems like it's going to have to get completely torn down.
No, it will. And the big problem with those engines, it's a flat single. So for anyone who hasn't actually seen a TTR 90, it's like a child's little dirt bike.
Like a PW or something.
Yeah, it's like a PW, but the cylinder sticks straight out in front. So any moisture, any rain, especially if the carburetor gets taken off, which looks like this one has, the rain just goes straight into the cylinder, and those things seize solid. So I had like a 2-foot breaker bar on the end of the crank, and it ain't going anywhere.
Because you guys had put the penetrant oil where in the spark plug hole,
fully penetrated.
So yeah. What I basically
and
said,
carb intake, right?
The moment he arrived, I said, "Look, we're going to deal with this one down the road. We'll deal with Exhibit B, which we're going to come to." But I said, "In the meantime, pull the spark plug out of Exhibit A. Squirt some really good quality penetrating oil down the bore and squirt it down the intake, and then we can just leave it to one side and let that stuff do its work while we're playing with Exhibit B."
And you know what's nice that I didn't know existed was that Kroll oil, the oil that creeps, comes in an aerosol can.
Yep.
That's brilliant. Anyway.
So you could huff it easier?
Well, you know, because you were spraying it like in the, you know, in the intake for the cylinder, you were spraying it down the hole. Because normally it comes in a little, like, you know, a 3-in-1
And in that paper bag
can.
That we were breathing in and out of.
Anywho.
You can actually make your own penetrating oil at home, children, by mixing equal parts ATF, which is automatic transmission fluid, and solvent. You know, and stuff like cellulose solvent works well, but any solvent. And if you mix equal parts of that with ATF, you make quite a good penetrating
what
oil.
Doesn't ATF do? Isn't that same as fork oil also?
Yeah, it's ATF is interesting stuff because it's oil that possesses a lot of weird properties. There's a lot of cleaning agents in it. There's a lot of self-lubricating agents. The reason why we like using it in forks, it possesses anti-frothing properties. So if you look at engine oil that's being mashed around an engine, you'll see there's a lot of aeration in it. And that's okay because the engine's designed for that. But we want to avoid that in forks if we can. So ATF is very, very good for that.
Because that's why you'll bleed dirt bike forks.
Yeah.
Right? Bleed the air out.
You bleed the air out so you don't get any aeration when they're bouncing up and down very, very quickly. Tra-la-la.
Little did I know.
How about that? So Exhibit B. So let's talk about Exhibit B,
yes,
shall we?
So Exhibit B was a 03 Honda XR100.
How much did you pay for that?
That was a gift.
So you paid nothing.
Shout out James Meacham, JMC Construction.
Woohoo, shout out.
Santa Cruz County out there out of Corralitos.
Right on.
Overheard me talking with some people about motorcycle stuff, and one thing led to another. He heard I had a kid, and I was teaching him how to ride, and he said, "Hey, I got an XR100 in my backyard rotting. Come grab it."
And you did?
Yeah.
And we were semi-successful in that we got it going, but...
Low compression.
Not just no compression. I mean, the piston is basically just flapping up and down in the bore. So
when you brought it in, you talked about oil on the spark plug. Would that be like an indication of,
oh, yeah,
of rings? Oh, so yeah, like rings, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah.
But that's not a big deal, rings,
no,
right?
And like, again, these bikes form a pattern. And I would guarantee that bike may have never had an oil change.
Oh, wow.
Well, yeah, who knows? And it's, I mean, 2003, I guess that's a few years ago.
But I have come across, you know, children's dirt bikes, yeah, that tend to be bought by mom and dad, you know, who know nothing about bikes, and have never had an oil change. And you wouldn't believe what the oil comes out. It's biblical, the stuff that comes out. It's incredible.
You know, that's totally likely. I think, just to guess, the kid that it was for outgrew it, and I know he was a professional mountain biker and sponsored by Fast House.
Mountain bikes don't have engine oil, darling.
Yeah, well, you know, I think when you ride and you do things at a certain level, you have a few toys. Some have engines, you know, and sometimes you're the engine.
What if it was ridden for X amount of hours and just parked?
Yeah, and I mean, that could do the same, but right, nevertheless, the worst case, way back in the 90s when I was working at San Luis Obispo Power Sports, we used to do ATVs, and generally the agricultural, the farmers' ATVs were quite neglected, and we we had this one come in that wouldn't start. And he's like, I don't know where it started last week, and this thing wouldn't go. It just crank and crank, and just like, this thing's got no compression. We took it apart, and the oil was shit. It was like black
tar.
No, the other way, it was like wee-wee.
Oh,
but ooh, black. And the piston rings had gone very strange. I mean, they were still there.
What does that
but
even
mean?
They
weren't,
they were just rattly.
Like, no, they weren't hard anymore. They were like soft. You could, ooh, like tie them in a knot. And it was,
oh no.
I know. It was like, oh my God.
So on Jake's bike, wow, do you think it's a matter of taking the head off,
yeah,
and popping up the cylinder, doing the rings?
I think
the valves seem to be okay.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a remarkably easy fix. I mean, the best thing about these single cylinder engines, you know, even though it's got an overhead cam, once you understand the concept of cam timing, it's going to be like an hour to pull the top end down, have a look, inspect it, clean it out, and then just reassemble it, and it'll run great. There's no reason why it shouldn't. It's got good spark. The carburetor's set up just so. So that's going to be ready for you. So yeah, just, you know, get some compression in there. But it's kick-starting that bike is like putting your foot in pudding. That's exactly what it's
a
like.
A bit soft, eh?
No, it's like running your naked foot through butterscotch pudding. There's no resistance.
I know what I'm doing when I go home. That's my safe way.
Pudding and shrimp.
Oh my God. And that was just Exhibit B, correct?
So now, now let's talk about Exhibit C.
Exhibit C.
Y'all were deep into Exhibit C.
This was the one I feel we were the most successful with.
Exhibit C, 1972 Honda SL125.
It had that spinning ignition system.
Right. And a lot of people get quite confused about what's what in the Honda dirt bike world. And we'll kind of distill it down. So the SLs were really the early form of the dual sport bikes. These were not competition bikes, these were street bikes, but they had pretense of off-road capability. And then they became the XL range later years.
Was it a 21-inch front wheel?
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
Honda also did the CL. And the CL...
That's what we're more familiar with, right?
Yeah, and the CLs were a little more glitzy and glamorous and a little more
had
Hollywood.
High side pipe.
Yeah, you know, and they...
Into punk rock just for the fashion.
Yeah, they were very... A lot more chrome on them, very, very bright paintwork. What Honda called a street scrambler.
Yeah.
They really died a death in the early 70s. But the SLs became the XLs, of which I know you've had a couple of them. So it's quite a pretty bike. It was complete. I would say. Or yeah, it's yeah. certainly 90% complete.
Yeah, this cat wanted to do a total resto, and he did his homework and got bits and bobs, and he's got a career and kids and new bikes, and he's like, I don't have time for this. Right. And he wanted it to go to a good home. And
it's there's a word of caution with this, because it's a trap that a lot of people fall into, is they'll buy a bike, do their homework, and they do everything right, and they start accumulating new old stock parts. And they do two things wrong. Number one, they accumulate far more than they need to. But they also make the mistake of thinking that the new parts are going to be better than the original parts. And in a lot of cases of like rubber parts, a perfect example is that totally. Tank oh mounting for the rear.
Yeah.
And so on a Honda SL, the tank is held by two buffers at the front and then this block at the back, and you have a tab and you kind of pull back the block.
Right, and they've kind of done that for a long time, the right. two rubber blocks on the frame.
Right, exactly.
Kind of thing.
Yeah. No, your bikes still have that now. Yeah. But the thing at the back, I mean, you know, there was this like massive rubber with a slot in it. You kind of pulled it back and manhandled the tank into it. And the replacement was an inferior rubber. And it was virtually impossible. And he'd been struggling with it, and you could see his frustration in it. And I said, well, where's the original? So he brings out the original, and the original's perfectly serviceable. Yeah. And in a lot of cases, of superior quality. See, remember, when these bikes rolled off the line 50 years ago, oftentimes metallurgy and the quality of metal itself was superior to what we can either get or the market will stand today. Mm. It's evident in a lot of things, certainly car manufacturing as well. If you compare, I know rust proofing has come a long, long way in cars, but if you compare the actual gauge of metal that cars are made of today compared with back 50, 40 years ago, it's amazing the difference. It really is. Cars are heavy these days because they're laden up with electronic stuff. Cars were heavy back in the old days because more things. Didn't necessarily mean they're safer, but it's just a different way of assembling them. And it's the same with bikes. So a lot of that stuff, the new stuff, you're going to end up binning because you're going to find the original old stuff is as good or better.
Absolutely.
But again, so what did you pay for this beast?
You know, they say you meet the nicest people on a Honda. I've met the nicest people giving away fucking Hondas.
Awesome. That's great. That's good.
So another free
bike. There's no such thing as a free bike. But
no, dude, you're vibrating at a good frequency.
So, yeah, so, and again, it's just something for your kid to be riding around on, or the neighborhood kids to
be 100%. Riding. A couple years he'll be in high school. If he's rocking up to high school on a fucking 72 Honda, so they'll be doing all right.
Well, I mean, the thing is with these old bikes, they're super cool looking. I mean, they look cool. And it's got good graphics on it, and it's a good size bike. So I think he'll be doing pretty well.
That's a charming little.
Yeah, it's you know. And in between now and then, there's plenty of room to get it running well, to get all the lights and everything working, because it's a 6-volt bike. So,
oh, it's 6-volt.
Oh, yes.
How hard is it convert to 12?
Oh, yeah.
You can. It's harder than you think because every piece of electrical equipment has to get changed. The turn signal bulbs, the headlight bulb, the tail light bulb, the horn, the coil, the condenser. But the big one, of course, the regulator rectifier, the big one, of course, is the generator. Hmm. And the only way you can really figure it out is if you find that the engine was developed through 12-volt times. So if you take an engine that started life in the 60s, like the 125 Honda, and it lasted until the 80s, basically unchanged, and it became a 12-volt bike, it makes life a lot easier.
Unlikely.
I don't think that engine did. Mm. I'm pretty sure that real simple 2-valve, because I know that Honda did a 125, an XL 125 in the 80s, and it was 12-volt, but I think it was a different crankcase. So you stuck with 6-volt, and that's not a bad thing. You just main, you know, the thing is with 6-volt electrics is they're not as crappy as people thought. You've just got to kind of conserve use of things like turn signals. If you're sitting at the lights, don't have your turn signals going blink, blink, blink with the engine idling, because you don't have that reserve capacity that you do in 12-volt. You know, so you turn your turn signals off, and when the light starts going green, then you put your turn signals back on so you know where someone's going. Stuff like that, and you don't sit at the lights with your foot on the brake pedal.
Yeah, or the horn.
Or the horn. You know, you just give people the finger.
I'm slapping
instead.
A surf rack on that thing, and they're going to get hand turn signals.
Yeah. Or, you know, a good thing, because you need a horn of some description. Get a squeaky, wah, 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 you know, on the handlebar. Yeah, just get something you can squeeze a bulb on the handlebar.
Everybody needs an Aguga.
Yes, exactly. So that was Exhibit C, and we were successful in that we got that one, and it's by no means perfect.
It fired.
But, well, beyond that, you were riding
it
down.
We went down the street.
Yeah, pushed it in.
Stoked.
Rode it out, you know, which is what we like to do.
Nice.
So that was pretty much the majority of our day.
And he was so stoked. Mike wanted that bike to go to a good home. He vetted me, called me up. He's like, what are you going to do with it? I was like, I'm sticking a fucking surf rack on there, man, and taking that thing to the beach.
Was that Mike with the beard?
Yeah,
what a nice guy.
Dr. Mike.
So yeah, Dr. Cool. Mike. Dr. Yeah, Mike, yeah. Right on. Shout out to Dr. Mike.
Yeah, he was a super cool dude.
Listener, long-term listener, too.
Oh, no kidding.
Yeah.
Is he a doctor?
Yeah.
Yeah?
He's a hand doctor.
Is he a hand doctor or a handy doctor?
What did you want to show him?
Yes. You know, I think one of the reasons, that one of the best reasons to become a proctologist is you could spend all day every day going, what an asshole.
Because there's so many good reasons. But the best.
But the best. So he's a hand doctor.
Yeah.
That's very interesting.
Yeah. You were in and out, but he was offering a hand job.
Yes.
Did you get one?
No.
No? I think Henry did.
I'm sure Henry did. You know, Henry.
Henry's handsome.
I know.
Have you
also
noticed?
Also is Dr. Mike.
And actually, Henry brought this up. Have you noticed how much Henry sounds like Keanu Reeves? But not just like Keanu Reeves. Keanu Reeves in Bill and Ted's Big Adventure. And he kind of looks.
Okay.
No, and he kind of looks like him as well.
Yep.
Yeah, yeah. It reminds me, what was that movie when they were in the jungle, the farce with Ben Stiller? Tropic Thunder.
Oh, God.
Oh, great movie that is. Never get made today, but it's a great movie.
And you remember, like, never go full blankety blank?
Yeah.
He reminds me of that in that way, if that makes any sense at all. Probably.
Yeah,
not.
Well, no, it kind of does. But in Bill and Ted, you know, if ever he was doing, like, cosplay.
Oh, he should, totally.
Yeah.
That's him. Mm-hmm.
Now, was it Bill or Ted who was Keanu Reeves?
I think it was Bill.
Ted. Was it Bill?
Was it Ted?
Ted.
Oh, all right.
It was Ted. He should go as Ted. You know, he'd totally win it. By far. But Henry, you know, he's...
And he rides fine Italian motorcycles.
He loves Italian bikes. And I have just... And I'm hoping he pulls the trigger on it. I've just found him a VFR. And I know he misses his VFR. So I found him a lovely 99 VFR. And hopefully he'll follow through on it at the nice price. They're just the greatest bikes. So that's what we did today. I would love to hear from you, Jim, about Liza's ride report, because we do like doing ride reports.
And oh, yeah.
Liza
is a
long way away.
Yeah, so Liza, as I think we all know, is on an adventure with Vintage Rides. And our dear friend Wendy Crockett from AMA Vintage Days Hall of Fame. I can never forget the image of Wendy at the burnout pit when, what's his name, had the firework on his head and the gimp mask on. Shit's on fire. Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Bagel. And GPP. Those guys are awesome. And there's Wendy just right in the middle of it with her face so happy. So anyway, they're down in Peru on Vintage Rides. So Liza is in Peru. I don't think she knew where it was until about 5 days ago. But I did get a call from her about a half an hour ago, and things are going swimmingly. So they're having a great time.
They're riding a Royal Enfields, right?
So they're riding Royal Enfields.
Yeah, and the old-fashioned ones as well.
The
Bullets, yeah.
And
the 350 or the 500 Bullets, yeah.
She told me, I just can't remember. Yeah, but as part of the tour, and they are going all across country to all these towns that I also can't remember the name of, but big elevation climbs. I think they were up to, gosh, like over 13,000 feet maybe, wow, and then back down. And I tell you, I've seen a couple of pictures from the trip, and it looks like they're having the time of their lives.
Oh, that is great.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, in Peru, Vintage Rides.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, so she's alive.
So she is alive. And
I did ask her about the llamas.
Yes.
Are they better on a stick or a
ball? I'm going to ask her personally in a couple of weeks. But she's away for this week. She's away for next week. But she will be back for the 7th, I think. What is it? 6th or 7th?
Yeah, I think she has a trial date. But yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And as we all know, Liza is still unemployed.
No, she's semi-retired.
She's semi-retired, but, oh, God, if somebody wants to give her a job, please give her a job.
No, don't. It's much better when she's traveling.
That's not...
Just teasing. I know you're listening.
It's kind of quiet around here today. I was wondering why.
I know.
Actually, you know what? I've said this before, and I think it's worth saying again. Part of the reason I feel this podcast is so successful is we have all these characters, and we're all so very different. I mean, nobody's more different than me and Liza. But we gel very well together. Mm-hmm. And we bounce off one another. When Liza isn't here, it is very much like a captainless ship. You know, I feel like quite the imposter hosting the show.
Rudderless, for sure.
Yeah. But, so, there we are. What we do today, Ride Report. But the show's not over because we've just started. Got a little bit of news. Well, before we go any further...
Well, I did a ride, too.
I know. Why don't we do your ride report? Because you got one in. Did you do a ride as well, Jim?
I did, but not nearly as cool as John. I saw a lovely... Scotty posted a picture of John online, and it was awesome, and it was the most lovely compliment I could have thought of.
So, love me some Scotty.
Scotty's awesome.
So, Scotty. The one thing I love about Scotty is they always push me to do things I probably wouldn't normally do.
So, yeah, ride like 350 miles
in the rain
on a Saturday. Yeah.
Yes.
Like, okay. I mean, it's not, yeah.
So I get up and it's pouring rain. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to do this. But then I'm like, I can't say no.
And the weather was mixed at best. Yeah.
It was dumping. So we had breakfast and we rode in about the first hour in the rain down through Hollister, down 25, past Pinnacles.
You rode the Tiger?
I rode the Tiger, yeah. Thank God. God, I rode the Tiger with the heated grips. That would have been rough without that. So, I was thinking about it yesterday. People, I mean, we have great roads here. We have 9. We have, PCH. We've, Big Sur. But that area we went through is not ridden by a lot of people or known by a lot of people. And this time of year, there's nothing like it. I mean, we're riding through. It's funny. I've been watching Yellowstone, and it reminds me of, what it looks like over there. But it was absolute green, verdant green hills. Beautiful time, but we rode down through kind of all name of that range?
Highway 25. It's the Gabilon Range on one side and the Diablo Range on the other.
Yeah, so we did that.
We're about to rumble.
Yeah,
where's my knife? I can't get to it quickly.
We have some rabble.
Suited and booted.
So hang on a sec.
Hold on.
All right, we're back. And there's more of us in here than we started. We took a quick break because there was a knock at the door. And lo and behold, there are two riders come in who are riding together from Yukon, of all places, on a California vacation.
That's America.
That is in America, I believe. Introduce yourselves.
I'm Darcy. We're from Whitehorse, Yukon. That's in Canada.
So I'm wrong.
I was wondering.
My bad.
Yeah, it's a long way from here, but we rented a bike through RiderShare to do a bit of a California trip.
And you said you're at the tail end of the trip.
We are. Yeah, this is I guess day 9 of 10.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because day 9 out of 10.
And who are you?
So I'm Darcy's partner, and we do 2 Up. So we have been doing this ride together, and my name's Jessica. I don't think I said that yet.
Well, it's lovely to have you both in the show. So
what a fun surprise.
Yeah, this is great. So
I thought we were about to get robbed again.
Yeah, it did seem that way. So what are you riding?
We're on a 2020 Suzuki V-Strom 1000 or okay. 1050, I guess.
They oh, nice.
Yeah. How you finding it?
I think it's a really comfortable ride. I like, I like the power, the handling. It seems to carry the both of us pretty good and all our gear.
So what do you ride at home?
At home, I have the 2018 V-Strom 1000.
So basically, nice. It's the same bike, just a little more developed.
Exactly. It's got cruise control and a couple more options on the ride modes as well as traction control.
Oh, fantastic.
The people I've know that got the V-Stroms, the new ones especially, love them on the street. Like, super fun to ride, super capable.
Yeah, I find that they're very capable. They're a lot more smooth on the road. I think they come from more of a street bike background, and then they kind of changed it to be upright and a little bit more capable off-road.
Well, you know, the inevitability of adventure bikes is they tend to make damn good street bikes. The exception, I feel, is the Africa Twin. But the new one, they went away from the 21-inch wheel and went down to the 19, so I think it's going to be a lot better behaved on the freeway. But adventure bikes make great street bikes because they're big, they're roomy. If there's two of you, there's plenty of room for you and your luggage. And they just eat up the miles. Now, Jessica, do you ride at home, or are you strictly on the back of Darcy?
I'm on the back right now, but I'm going to get my license this summer.
That's what we like to hear.
Hell yeah.
It's pretty easy to get it in Whitehorse, too, so...
You basically buy a dirt bike and have...
Pretty so much.
I just looked up Whitehorse on the map because I was very embarrassed. So I did my research. I apologize. What a beautiful place. I saw the river with the canyon.
Mm-hmm.
What a beautiful place that is.
Now,
it is a beautiful place. I haven't ridden enough of it. Hoping to do a lot more of it this year, so...
Well... We're so very, very spoiled here in California because our riding season's basically, if you don't mind putting up with the rain, it's 12 months of the year. We can ride every day of the year if we want. You deal with the little
bit
of rain.
What does it take to get a motorcycle license in Canada? Is it like here, or is it?
Depends on the province.
Oh. And
or territory. If you speak
French, a Yukon is.
Salut, brat, brat.
But I think the downside, do you have a shorter riding season?
We do. We probably start late April, if we're lucky, and sometime in September or October.
So basically a six-month riding season.
Yeah, again, you got to put up with the cold weather kind of on the tail end of either side. I do have some friends in Alaska and the Yukon right now that have both completed rides up to the Arctic Ocean with studded tires this winter. So you can do it. You can do it year round, but wow. not for everybody.
Yeah. Not my idea of a groovy time. I don't think. Jim, fancy that?
No.
Studded tires.
I do admire the chutzpah.
Welcome on the show, and thank you for joining us. You kind of got us halfway through, so I want to keep an eye on the time, and if we've got, I'd love to have a little chat with you.
I know, I'd like to revisit for a minute, because y'all just like showed up having no clue what's going on.
Right.
Not a clue. We got a little bit of a recommendation to come by. And
you're like, we just need to do an oil change and a tire. That's it.
Absolutely. I want to share a couple of bits of news from this week. One international, one local, which is certainly worth talking about. And the international one is MV Augusta has changed hands again. And I mean, God almighty, this company gets through more owners than the worst. If you remember right, it was Harley Davidson for a little while. And it's been in the hands of the Piaggio group for a long time. Care to guess who bought it now?
Walmart.
I'll give you a clue. You own one of their
KTM.
Products.
KTM.
Yes. KTM are now the new owners of MV Augusta.
Not surprised.
Well, KTM are kind of doing their world domination thing right now. And they've been very clever up to this point, because if you look at the range of products, there's a commonality between all of them. And yes, a Husqvarna is a very, very different animal to a KTM, but I think there's a commonality in design and development that kind of makes it very easy for them to do that. But God, MV Augusta, that is a shot in the dark.
Iconic, yeah. It'll be very interesting to see what they do with that. I mean, KTM had a hell of a day in MotoGP today.
Yeah,
unbelievable.
They
did. Their 19-year-old rider on
he's
the podium. Wow.
Yeah.
But great yeah, I'm today. Very, very curious to see because they've had their hand at other brands. So I'm very curious to see. But MV Agusta is such a high design penned with that 37 world championships.
Well, I think that's what KTM's after because if we think KTM really are trying to make inroads into GP racing right now. I mean, they're doing it.
They're doing it.
But now they've got the brand.
At the junior level, are those KTM bikes?
Some of them are.
Are they? Okay, like that junior
at Moto 3. Yeah,
Moto 3. Yeah.
And they had the KTM Cup for a while where they were all the 390s.
Yeah. Well, Moto America had that too.
Such different heritage, though, when you think of MV Agusta, right?
Well, the obvious comparison I'm going to make is if you think about Lamborghini and the Volkswagen Audi group, and I think that's what we're going to see, something very, very similar to that. And if KTM are smart, and I know there is at least, I saw a list of the board of directors, and there's at least two Italians on the board of directors, the rest are German and Austrian. But if they're smart, they'll kind of give them some slack and let them develop the very Italian side of the bikes and just kind of lend this, Alice correct, German engineering mentality to keeping the things on the road. Because as gorgeous as MV Agustas are, they weren't always the best engineered.
They're still Italian.
I mean, they were gorgeously engineered, but that doesn't necessarily mean they held themselves together. So that's a good bit of news. The second bit of news, which is a fantastic cause for celebration, we talked a couple of months ago about Laguna Seca Raceway versus the Highway 68 Coalition.
Oh, no.
Which we thought was one man.
Those wankers.
Well, anyway.
Those tossers.
It's been settled.
That's awesome. Hotel.
And Laguna Seca is holding a full racing program for 2024 and beyond. So I'm not going to say that it was ruled in their favor. I believe there are some noise concessions that Laguna Seca have got to make. I think turn six needed some remedial work because it was quite noisy. It all depends on how the noise is flowing.
Why don't you catch all our listeners up to what was happening?
So basically, Laguna Seca is our world famous racetrack, and it's been around in various forms since just after the Second World War. Yeah, and in recent years, there has been a number of lawsuits brought against it by what was called the Highway 68 Coalition. And it was very, very easy to dismiss the Highway 68 Coalition as this group of homeowners who bought the houses in the 70s and the 80s, long after Laguna Seca was established, and didn't like the noise. Because California real estate is so damn expensive. If you're paying $3 or $4 million for a house, and then, you know, you're hearing racetrack noise at the weekend, or indeed motorcyclists blasting up and down the local highway making a lot of noise. It was a little more complex than that. The Highway 68 Coalition, and no, I'm not going to name him, was headed by one guy who has lived for a very, very long time.
Phil McCrevis.
Yes.
Is his name.
There you go.
Yeah, Phil McCrevis.
And I think whether he was a figurehead or he was just one of a coalition, but had launched a complaint basically against Laguna Seca. And it got kind of ugly for a while. So it looks like Laguna Seca have won. And
nice.
The County of Monterey stepped in. And obviously various motor racing groups, including the Sports Car Club of America. And I think the MotoGP.
The noise issue, was it bikes or was it the cars? Because they race cars there all the time.
Well, you know, it's oftentimes a lot of people find it easy to throw shade at bikes because we're an easy target. And it's, oh, look at that little thing making all that noise. Having been to enough races at Laguna Seca, particularly where the classic race cars come through, if you have seen, a Pro Stock Camaro going around the track, they make an incredible din I mean, far louder than any bike.
Yeah.
So I think, although we were demonized as motorcyclists, I think it was a problem for all the racing.
So to fix it, they just put baffles back in?
Yeah, basically.
What does that do to the performance of all the cars and motorcycles?
No. I mean, they're actually going to build like noise deflection on the track.
Oh, okay.
No, I mean, Laguna Seca has had noise suppression for motorcycles and cars for years.
Did Liza mention we got turned around on 17-mile drive?
No.
Yeah, she did.
You didn't on the podcast.
Oh, yeah, well, she did, yeah.
Yeah, but motorcycles aren't allowed on 17-mile drive. That's never have been.
Yeah. I don't know if she mentioned that last week or not, but yeah, no motorcycles on 17-mile drive in Monterey.
Yes, and never have been. Mm-hmm. So so here's a top tip. If you're touring California on a motorcycle, as our new friends are, and you fancy going to see 17-mile drive in Pebble Beach,
like we did a couple of weeks
you
ago, because it's been a while.
You ain't going to get in, because they don't allow bikes in there.
Yeah, we were turned around at the gate. I know, who knows?
Now, funnily enough, if you are a resident
and
you own a motorcycle, you can get in, but that's the only way you're going to get in, with a residence plaque.
Now, if you're a resident and you invite your friends in on motorcycles, are they allowed to come in then?
I have ridden motorcycles in 17-mile drive while delivering them.
Uh-huh.
So, I don't know. Hmm. That's quite a good question. I think, you know, I mean, Pebble Beach is an old boys club. I mean, if you drop the right name at the gate, you know, or I'm friends with John
Very
Smith,
true.
And, you know, you're going to get in. But to the hoi polloi, if you ride a motorcycle, you don't stand a damn chance. So
where there's a will, there's a way.
Tra-la-la.
That is largely true.
So welcome.
Yeah. So and the third bit of news, which really is brand new news, Colorado's lane splitting is moving through local government.
Oh, good.
Ooh,
so it is advancing. I'm cautiously optimistic about this one because, God, it needs to happen. It's very restrictive, but it is a foot in the door. The law as it stands, as being proposed, is that motorcycles are allowed to lane split in stop traffic at speeds no greater than 15 miles an hour.
Ooh.
Which, I mean, it's not great.
It's better than not, though.
But it is better than nothing. And who were we? Was I talking to you about Colorado, Jim? No, I was talking to somebody. Yeah, really? I was talking to somebody this afternoon about Colorado. He said, oh, God, no, it needs to happen because, you know, what happens up in the Yukon? Do you have are you allowed to lane split up there in the frozen north?
As far as I know, you can't lane share in anywhere in Canada. That was a new thing when I came down to California to realize that you could do that. Didn't know how to approach it, but we did a little bit of it throughout.
It's great.
It's a lovely thing.
It's one of those things, if you're a spectator or you try and describe it to someone, it's terrifying. But when you actually do it, it's like parting the Red Sea. It's great.
Well, especially at low speed, right?
Yeah, it was terrifying the first chance at it. After I did it for a little while.
Like, it wasn't on purpose, actually. I'm like, we're lane splitting now.
So there you go. Three great bits of news.
Good news.
Yeah.
Nice.
I'm kind of interested in our Yukon people. They've just walked into the show. This is great. So when did you start your trip? And just give us a brief rundown of where you've been.
All right. So we flew into San Francisco on the 16th. And then we went from there. We met up with Eric in Walnut Creek. And we went north to Sacramento from there, stayed there for the night with some friends. And then we ended up in Calistoga for a night. And then we went down Napa Valley out to Highway 1.
Highway 1 north of Golden Gate?
Yeah, north of Golden Gate.
Beautiful. It's very twisty.
Oh, yeah.
It was very twisty. We came through the town of Tamales.
Yes. Yeah.
It's kind of where we started.
It's where
off.
They make tamales.
It's where they make oysters.
Spelled differently, you rotter.
So we came down Highway 1 that way because well, we wanted to come across the Golden Gate Bridge.
That's, yeah, but it's beautiful, right?
No, you're not hearing an earthquake. Well, it might be an earthquake. John is making the adjustments on the microphone. You know, Northern California is absolutely gorgeous, but...
So did you come over the Golden Gate
then? Yeah, I was going to say.
We did come over the Golden Gate. And
how was the weather?
The weather was perfect. I mean, the trip has been amazing. We got the rain yesterday, and that's really the only bit of rain mm-hmm. that we got at all. Yeah, so our...
Get closer to the mic.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yes.
Sorry. I'm new to this.
That's quite all right. You're doing great. There you go.
Yeah, so after we left Calistoga, we actually rode all the way down to Santa Cruz that day.
And everything's beautifully green, right? Like, yeah. Beautiful with the rain. Yeah.
Well, you know, California is the golden state. And people say, well, you know, it's because you need to be wealthy to live here, which isn't entirely true. It's the golden state because as soon as the rain stops, everything that's green right now is going to go shade of brown.
But it's lovely. Well, I'm curious. You had a chance to look around.
Yep.
Have you been down this way before?
No, like Disneyland when I was a child. But right.
So
not really exploring.
So what have been your impressions of the Bay Area and Highway 1 and all that? Like, because you got to soak it all in.
Yeah.
He was white knuckling it down the one, I'm sure.
There's a little bit more traffic to deal with down here.
Is fuck up there, really.
The Yukon is 30,000 people. In the whole territory, right? So this population has been kind of a shock for us, especially down the interstates and all of that.
California's busy.
But
there's more people than that in Santa Cruz.
Most of the places we visited.
But we did a lot of back roads, actually. So Darcy's been mostly planning it. And he takes the map and he's like, okay, from this point to this point. But we want to go through the back roads. We're going to get off the highway if we can, as well as Highway 1. We couldn't go all the way down, right, because of the floods.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Highway 1 is, I guess, closed.
South of here.
Yeah, past here. So we didn't get to see that section of Highway 1. Yeah. So.
But it was incredible. Like, we've gone through Carmel Valley.
Carmel Valley is gorgeous, isn't it?
And we were doing those back roads, and it was just like the valley would open up, and it was just gorgeous, and like, very windy, but so much fun. Like, I'm on the back just holding on, and he's just cruising away. Not white knuckling there, I hope.
You already, like, dialed in after that. You're like, I'm good now.
After a little bit, it was definitely a lot at the beginning with a lot of the traffic. And
is this a trip you'd both planned for a long time, or was it kind of a spur of the moment thing?
It was a bit more of a spur of the moment. It was at Christmas time, we had a bottle of wine, and it was from Napa Valley, and we just kind of started discussing coming down to California after that.
That's awesome. Well, no good story started with I had a salad.
So. So this is just great. So unfortunately, you have to go home tomorrow.
We're riding back to San Francisco tomorrow, and then we fly out on Tuesday.
Okay, and how long's the flight back? Because it's quite a way up there, isn't it?
It is. So I think it's a couple hours from here, from San Francisco to Vancouver, and then a couple more hour flight from there.
Oh, that's
it's really
so
just it's 4 hours four total. Hours
maybe.
So we'll see you again in no time, I'm sure. Liza does rent her bikes, so you can actually come right here and rent a motorcycle.
Okay.
Perfect. I'll have to keep that in mind. But
Now bear in mind, you are sitting in a room full of Californians, or not necessarily native, but Californians. Would you come back again?
Oh, absolutely. I feel like I didn't spend enough time in enough of the places, and I would certainly want to come back, if nothing else, to ride Highway 1 from here down.
Well, you've seen a very, very unique part of California. I mean, it's Northern and Southern California are very, very different animals. When you actually get south of San Luis Obispo, and then down towards Santa Barbara and Los Angeles and San Diego, it's completely different again. And then if you actually get into the San Joaquin Valley, which is going quite east, it's different again. It's just such an amazingly diverse place. But the motorcycling is great throughout this state.
Well, and we went to Joshua Tree, too.
Yeah, we did. So we did make it down.
Oh,
we did make it down as far as L.A. We... we went from Pismo Beach out to Joshua Tree.
Brilliant.
We took some terrible roads out that way, but we just didn't know it was a better ride back, and then we came through LA back up this
way. Had you been to the desert before?
Or that was another kind of checkbox. It was, let's go check out the desert.
Right on.
It was all right. It was definitely a little bit windy out there at the time. You turn the corner and it's just a field of windmills. It's going to be a bit windy.
Springtime in the desert gets breezy.
Mm-hmm. Right. There's a ride called Babe's Ride out in Joshua Tree every, I think, November, and the weather's absolutely perfect. But
the springtime in the desert, the wind
blows. One or two times in November you'll get the winds come through, the zephyrs and the siroccos, and it's like it's just howling at night, and you're in your tent, and then you wake up and nothing is where you left it.
I know that all of us we're all looking at each other like, ooh, yeah. Fucking great.
Well, I'm thrilled you had such a good trip. I'm thrilled you're enjoying California so much. So you have it here, folks. If you want to come on a riding motorcycling trip through California, here's proof that you can do it.
And if you need a place to stay, Liza's not here. Her bed is right in the back. It has its own bathroom.
Yeah, you'll have to share it with a cat.
Yeah.
Yeah. So what have you been doing? Just staying at local hotels and camping on the bike, or?
No, we just did hotels for this trip. Yeah, that was sort of the plan. We didn't want to carry all of our camping gear and things.
No, I think that's smart. Great. Actually, you know what? We were planning on doing an hour show, and we're pretty much there. Do we have any emails this week, John?
No.
What? No emails at all?
No emails at all.
I have one email I've gotten.
Yes, go on then.
All right.
Actually, I take it back. I was just being impromptu. I have two. Now I have two emails that make road to more. So a podcast listener, Sean O'Hare, I want to recognize. So Sean's a cool
Hello,
dude.
Sean.
Hello,
Hello,
Sean.
Hello, Sean.
Brilliant. S-E-A-N, Sean. And he's a good Midwesterner, and also has a love for birds. He's a falconer, which is brilliant. He's friends with Uncle Phil and all them. So he gave me a mission, should I choose to accept it? And I turned y'all on to it today. So I'm thinking, if anybody's down for a little adventure, we're going to head down to the desert near where y'all were, to Barstow. So Sean turned me on to a little bit of history. There was a plane crash. People that know Edwards Air Force Base is down there. And Edwards, one of the things, they were producing a ton of experimental aircraft out of there. And there was one aircraft, the Valkyrie, the
XB-70.
The XB-70, which is maybe a supersonic
bomber. Absolutely. It looked like the future. If you imagine...
It still looks like the future.
Well, it really does. Yeah. But early 1960s, there were only two made. And
yes.
One made a very spectacular ending. And there it is in the desert.
Yeah, so one of them, unfortunately, brings us here. And so one crashed in the desert north of Barstow, and Sean was checking out, like, hey, I don't know if I'll be able to make it there, but if you wanted to check it out, that would be cool. So I did find out where there's a small, apparently a memorial, out in the desert somewhere. Because when you get north of Barstow, I knew it'd be like desolate. It's not Canada desolate, but for us, it's still pretty darn desolate out there. But I'm going to do a little adventure. I think in a month or two, I'm going to head down to Barstow if anybody wants to jump in.
Let's do it.
Grab some dirt bikes. And
yep.
But anyway, the plane crashed there. I want to go find the memorial site.
And I have a request if you go down there. Is just remember, it is a military aircraft. You can't really regard it as a war site, but it is a grave site, because all the crew on that and the chase plane that hit it, the Starfighter, died in the accident. So please treat it respectfully.
So keep your pants on.
Yeah, no, of course. There is a history behind it, and I do have a child who is currently serving active in the Navy.
Right, absolutely.
So with absolute respect, we will treat it. But that was cool. So, Sean, thanks for the mission. I do choose to accept it. And on your behalf, I will go, and hopefully with friends, we will search out this place in desolate lands.
Are you going to go down for that one, Craig?
Barstow. Mission accepted.
Where's the other plane? Is that like Timothy Leary's private plane, experimental aircraft?
I don't know, where's the other one?
No, I think the other one's in probably the Smithsonian museum. Yeah, I think it's in the Museum of Flight.
It looks like a Concorde. It's an amazing aircraft.
Yeah, it's a lot
aircraft.
Bigger than Concorde. I mean, this thing is a huge
It literally sucked another fighter aircraft into its tailwind.
Oh, so, fuck. So the story goes that this was, I believe, the second prototype, and it was flying in cruise, and they had two camera planes that were following in very, very close formation.
Holy shit.
And the one got a little bit close. And like if you get close enough to a ship, you'll get sucked into it. And it's the same with an aircraft because, you know, it passes through the air the same way. And he basically got sucked in. And it was pulled over the tail. And it tore off one of the vertical stabilizers.
So it's going Mach 3.
But yeah, it's a Mach 3 plane.
Mach 3.
Wild piece. Wow.
When it crashed, wild it was going Mach 3?
Well, it was in a hard dive.
That's what caused the initial...
The camera plane clipped the wing.
Yeah, camera plane clipped the wing.
This was during the whole crazy secretive Edwards Chuck Yeager.
Well, this is like Skunk Works. Right
a little. It was a little right later stuff. Than. No, it was a little later than Chuck Yeager because I mean Chuck Yeager. He was the first guy to break the sound barrier in 48. I believe. This is 61, 62.
65 actually.
Okay. Was it that late?
That's what it says. Well, Wikipedia says it.
But it was the height of the Cold War.
This is when some of the Apollo guys were flying these before they got asked to go on some of the...
Well, the film, the Chuck Yeager film, was called The Right Stuff. The Apollo program generally plucked their rank from military test pilots because these guys are balls of steel.
No fucks given, right?
Like, oh, absolutely. Sure, I mean, you needed to have a certain amount of cojones.
And natural ability to adapt.
Right.
To challenging situations on the fly. No,
exactly. Now, Jim, do you have a second email or were you just being Jim?
I think I was just bullshitting.
So,
I think.
What I want to close with tonight.
Thoughts come and go. You know what I'm saying? like clouds.
What I'm going to close the show with tonight is I'm going to tell you about the best motorcycle movie you've never heard of. And I encourage you to dig this out. Now, I saw this movie. I'm showing my age now, not long after it came out. And occasionally it kind of pops up into my memory, but it is very much of the culture. It's very much of the time. It's enormously entertaining. And it's got some great motorcycle stunts in it. In your opinion, one of the best you've ever seen. And the film is called Little Faust and Big Halsey.
Little Faust and Big Halsey.
Made in 1970. It's really, it's the anti on any Sunday.
Exactly. So Emma turned me onto this today. And maybe like some of you, I've never heard of this before.
I just bought it, so.
Dude, I watched it today. You got to see it. So if you think about the Bruce Brown films like Endless Summer, around here, Surf Culture, Endless Summer. Or on any Sunday, obviously, if anybody's listening, they've heard it. Best motorcycle film ever. So as much as those were fun and of the era, they were very much like groovy and happy and everything's good. Hey, it's fun. This is the complete antithesis of this. This is like, I'm kind of drunk and I'm broke and I'm going to hustle my way through flat track racing. Actually, they were desert hare scrambles. It was hare and hound.
Ooh, bad news bears.
Desert hare and hound scrambling and hustling the way through it. And I hate to say it, I think it might be quite an accurate portrayal of the kind of people that were involved back then.
I don't doubt it. Like, there's so many little things. So I started watching it after Emma turned me on to it. One thing is second place will get you $30. But it stars Robert Redford.
Back in the day, that was worth something.
Well, apparently it was worth a lot. But it starred Robert Redford at, I don't know if his prime or not, but he was very physically fit.
Yeah, I was going to say, he's not far off his prime.
It could have been the most misogynistic role I've ever seen in a movie. He actually, I can't even say it, just he was very misogynistic in the movie.
It's very much an adult movie, but from a perspective of looking at it from a period of time. The motorcycling itself, it's really a golden age of motorcycling. And the bikes they're riding and the way they're riding them.
If you liked On Any Sunday, you will love this because it's like the dark white underbelly of On Any Sunday. Well, and the premise of the story is it's desert racing. It starts in Arizona. They come to California, and it's this flashy Robert Redford who's a player with all the ladies and always comes in second or third or his bike breaks down. And then there's this lowly mechanic who also races with bottle glasses.
Not an attractive guy.
No, he's loved a famous by his character parents. Actor, though. As his parents said, he has no friends.
Right.
But they strike this unlikely friendship between the two of them, and they travel to California to find their fortune in desert motorcycle racing.
Right.
And it's utterly brilliant.
And it there's a real plot twist at the end. So I do recommend it. It's not a film to sit next to your granny and watch. It's not a film for children.
So the name again?
Little Faust, Fauss, and Big Halsey.
You know who else is in this, right? Lauren Hutton's in it.
Yeah.
And Noel Berry.
Yeah.
Some famous actors.
Oh, yeah. There's a lot of famous people in this. But it is very much, you know, 69, 70, 71, there was a lot of anti-hero films. If you think about Vanishing Point, if you think about Two Lane Blacktop, even if you think about Easy Rider, it's very much of that vein of anti-hero film. And it's very, very interesting to delve into that period of history.
And it was a wonderful, like, it reminds me of almost Cool Hand Luke in a sense.
Yeah, it's kind of Cool Hand Luke-y,
isn't
that
it? That cinematography vibe to it. But I swear to God, the one stunt I was referring to is when when Little Fowls and him were just chasing sheep through, they were chasing sheep through this field. A farmer chases them off with a double-barreled shotgun for a while. They come back to his house, and the Robert Redford character literally crashed into a wall and double-W'd over the motorcycle into a tree. And I'm like, that was nuts. That was ballsy stunt work. Anyway, it was a good. It was fun to watch.
Never heard of it. That's great.
Neither had I, and it was brilliant. Yeah. Wow. Best $3.99 you can spend.
So there you go.
There's YouTube.
Is that a top tip?
That is a Misfits top tip.
I just Googled it and it came up. Oh, it was on like the Amazon.
Oh, gotcha.
So, I think it's time to get out of here. I know it's a short show this week, and I mean we're doing a short show really in honor of Liza. We only do the 2 hour shows when Liza is concerned.
I know.
Keep your emails coming. Just because we didn't read them this week,
didn't check them. That was the problem.
Yes, John.
So send us an email. So I've got something to read.
Yeah, send us an email. So we are doing this next week. Next week, are you going to run the board next week?
I am. Yes,
because it is Easter Sunday.
I know. I've committed.
Good. Well, I've committed to doing the show as well.
But so we'll have an Easter service here, me and you.
How about that?
Yeah, we go. We'll hide some eggs.
Yeah, we can throw eggs at each other.
We'll have Jim chase the eggs.
Like the egg.
Where are you going to hide them?
hopefully, Jim is in Nevada high desert camping, freezing his ass off.
I was supposed to be there, but I'm going to be here.
I'll be there if you can make it.
Yeah.
Do you have dinner plans tonight? Where are you staying tonight?
Where are we staying? We're Solaris. At the Solaris, yeah.
In town. Oh, that's cool.
So we're staying here.
They just redid that hotel. I think the restaurant there is lovely. Yeah, that's
that. Is that Equinox or whatever?
Yeah, the old Equinox.
Something like that.
We went through, they just reopened Excalibur. It last year.
Oh,
food was great.
On Ocean, by the
way.
Yeah,
right,
that's the one on Ocean Street.
If not, Special Noodle is just up a
right
little
there.
Bit.
Oh, Special Noodle is killer.
Dude, Special Noodle.
Okay. Yeah, that place.
Top tip.
Bring your checkbook, though.
Bring your smartphone. It's a fucking QR code menu.
Most expensive Chinese food ever, but it's awesome.
Just have three things.
Yeah.
Does Melissa call you her special noodle? Does she, Johnny?
No, spicy shrimp.
my little
spicy bay shrimp.
Okay, so my lovely friends from Yukon, follow along. You're going to be able to figure this out. So I think it's time to get out of here. This is Emma Darling.
Jacques Bondu.
Stumpy John.
Craigzilla. Naked Jim, son.
You, Bagel.
Bagel.
There it is.
I'm Yukon ADV Strong.
Oh!
Jazzy Jazz.
Jazzy Jazz and the Funky Bunch. Jazzy Jazz and Yukon. What was it?
Yukon ADV Strong.
Oh, that's too much.
I like it.
That's awesome.
And on that note, we are out of here. Cool.